How's everybody doing? Okay. It's a new year, and I know many of us, a lot of times we feel the weight of whatever we've been doing in life, we just feel like it's not working, right? I don't feel at peace. I don't love the people in my life the way that I think that I should love them. I'm captivated by things that are not satisfying me. And if that's you, you are definitely not alone, right? And one of the questions we might ask ourselves is, why isn't that changing? Like, I feel like the needle in my life should be moving a different direction, and it's not. But here's the thing that we're often not willing to admit to ourselves, and it's this, that the system of your life is perfectly designed to get the results that you're already getting. You hear what I'm saying? Right? If you're like, I feel tired all the time, I feel anxious day to day, I don't feel comfortable with my body, I hate that I'm in debt, I hate that I'm sucked into my phone or my computer or my TV, I don't like that I feel a long, long ways away from God, I don't like that I know so many people, but I don't feel close intimacy with any of them, there's a good chance that something about your system in life is off. Now, one of the myths that we tried to dispel last week is that the Christian life often gets oversimplified to this idea that we do nothing and God gives us everything. Now, don't miss the nuance of the Christian life here. It is true. You cannot save yourself. We believe that wholeheartedly as followers of Jesus. We are a people in need of saving. You can't save yourself. It only comes from the work of Jesus on the cross. You can't earn that. But in order to experience the life that God longs for us to experience, of course there is action that's required on our part. And if you're new to following Jesus, or if you have been following Jesus for a long time, all of us, myself included, need to reconcile with the fact that the formation of our lives, whether it's to be formed more into the person of Jesus or less into the person of Jesus, whatever's happening in our lives, if it's going this way or that way, that formation is dependent, at least in part, to the system that we build our life on, the practices by which we order our life. Now, there's a part of me that hates preaching messages like this because I don't want this space to become like a self-help space. I don't want us showing up at church because we're trying to find the special sauce to get a better life, all right? I want us showing up at church because we're captivated by our Maker and our Savior. But therein lies the most important part of our life formation as followers of Jesus. It's being with Jesus, seeking the Lord, dwelling on who He is, abiding with Him. There are so many things threatening that connection with our Savior. Last week we talked about what I think is probably the biggest threat, and it affects almost all of us in our Western worlds today, but we probably think very little of it, and it's this, it's hurry. This is what we talked about last week. We aren't a people with just a lot of things to do, right? We're a people with way too much to do. And so we live hurried lives, and in an effort to get it all done, we feel like we get nothing done, right? We want to experience it all. We want to try the next thing. We want to scroll down to the next post. We want to watch that next episode, and our lives just feel hurried, hurried, hurried. And so our goal in this series that we've called Abide, a Curriculum in Christlikeness, is to lean into those practices that will allow us to become more like Jesus. So today's message is going to be a bit more hands-on and practical. If you take notes, get ready for like a fire hose of suggestions. Last week, I recommended the book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. Now, John Mark has done an amazing job of synthesizing a lot of incredible work from people over generations. And so I highly recommend his book. And so you'll get a lot of that condensed work here today. If you hear me say something smart today, thank you, John Mark. But before we get to the pragmatic what do I do stuff, so for those of you who like practical, today's for you, all right? But before we get to that stuff, let's start with Scripture. And in one of the most important places that we can go in Scripture when we're considering what it means to be formed in our lives as Christ followers, John chapter 15. That Glenn read for us. These are Jesus' parting words, by the way. He knows he's about to be arrested. He knows he's about to be put to death on the cross. And so he's speaking to his disciples all these important things before this monumental thing comes that he knows is coming and they don't know is coming, even though he's told them. But how interesting is it that as he is facing his own death, he's speaking words of life to them. He's teaching them how they might experience life to the fullest. Now, words that outline how they might know and experience life the way it is meant to be experienced. And so as you listen to Glenn read those words to us from the beginning of John chapter 15, what is it we hear over and over and over again? I'll read some of just these few verses here. Remain in me, and I will also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Catching anything there? All right. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you're the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in my words, remain, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. Now, the NIV translators graciously translate the Greek word meno as the word remain, the English word remain, because it's a more common word for us modern English speakers. But a much better translation, and the one we use for the sermon series, is the English word abide. Meno literally means to make your home in. And that's what Jesus is asking of those who call themselves his followers. Stay close to me. Dwell in me. That's how you're going to thrive in life. That's how you're going to grow in life. And as Jesus often did, he uses analogy and illustration to help his hearers better understand. But that's a challenge for us today because what do we know about like agrarian culture? Very little, I would imagine. Like, what do we know about tending to a grapevine? Right, probably not much. But here's the gist of what you need to know about what Jesus is talking about. And it's this. Grapevines, they can survive very well if left unattended. If they're left to run wild, they're just going to continue to grow and grow and grow. I used to find wild grapevines in the woods behind my parents' house in Ohio. Like, so we don't really think of that as grape country, do we? Yeah, but they're there. They're all over the place. But you know what I never found on those grapevines? Grapes, right? Grapes and grapevines are very finicky in this way. Growing is not the challenge. Bearing fruit is the challenge, right? If a grapevine is left to run wild, it'll grow up a tree that's nearby. If there's no tree, it'll just run around the ground. And great branches on the ground, what happens? They get covered because they don't grow up. They just lay there on the ground, and they get covered with dirt. They'll stay too moist. They'll often develop mold spores on the leaves. All of these things don't promote healthy growth. They prevent fruit from growing. So what does a vine dresser in a vineyard do? They lift up the branches and tie them along a trellis. I think we got a picture here. There's like a very beautiful-looking trellis. Here. And you see the grape vines are not, or the branches are not on the ground. They're up at the top. And you see the vine there, you see the vines along the sides growing up out of the ground. That's that thick branch coming up out of the ground. The branches are up there at the top. And when branches grow down on the ground, they either need to be redirected up or they need to be cut off altogether. And that's what Jesus says at the very beginning. Jesus is the vine. Jesus is the source of life. He's the one planted in the ground. And verse 2 is a little bit tricky here because most translators translate the word aero as cut off to match the similar idea that's found in verse 6. But a more likely translation, I think a better translation, is probably lift up, which is exactly what the vine dressers will do to the branches that are growing down on the ground. They're going to lift them up and tie them to the trellis. The branches are lifted up. They're connected to the trellis so that they can flourish. Now, hold on to that image because we'll be back there in a moment. But over and over again, Jesus repeats this idea that the branches, you and me, must abide in him, must remain connected to him. The only way we can remain connected to him is if we're directed in the right direction. The life is in the vine, and if the branches get cut off or if they're left to just be on the ground, they're not going to bear fruit. And eventually, they're just going to get cut off. And the overarching idea could not be more clear. Life will be limp and broken and fruitless without connection to the giver of life. And this is Jesus' model for what we call spiritual formation. It's very simple. The way that we grow and mature as people of the way of Jesus is that we abide in him. Now the question for you pragmatic folks is, how? How do we do that? How do we slow down and live with Jesus? Now, this is not just a modern problem, by the way. This is an ancient human problem. And the answers that the ancient followers of Jesus came up with to unhurry their lives and find themselves in Jesus was something called a rule of life. This is old stuff, like St. Patrick among the Celts, 4th century old, and likely even farther beyond that in the 2nd century. But the practice of a rule of life started to become more widely practiced by St. Benedict in the 5th century BC when he wrote up his rule of life for his new monastic order, which is still going today, by the way. So they must be doing something right. Like, a lot of times we're like, wow, a church lasted 150 years. Like, that's really old. No, like the Benedictines, they're still going strong. There's a whole bunch of them down in Hingham that you can visit anytime you want. They're happy to have you come and stay with them. It's amazing. But a rule of life is this ancient language, by the way. It should sound a bit odd to you, right? We should note at the onset here that we're talking about a rule of life, singular, not rules for life, okay? Excuse me. The original Latin word was the word regula, from which we get words like regular or regulation. Some scholars believe that the origins of this idea came from the idea of a trellis, like the picture that we just saw. Just like the trellis that a vine dresser might use to hold up grapes and vine branches in a vineyard, these ancient saints took Jesus' illustration of a vineyard to its logical conclusion. And what did they do? They created for their lives a trellis, a way to keep their lives closely connected to the vine. So, what is a rule of life? Here's how Pastor Comer describes it. A rule of life is a schedule and a set of practices and relational rhythms that create space for us to be with Jesus, to become like Jesus, and to do what he would do if he were us, so that we may bear much fruit. Now, it's important to know what a rule of life is not. A rule of life is not a law, all right? A law is handed down to us by an external source. A law has very little flexibility. It's like you have to do the law, like this, or you cannot break the law. If you break the law, then there are consequences, right? A law is based on guilt and innocence. And a law is typically designed to keep us away from something negative. And there's nothing wrong with any of that, by the way. We need laws. They're meant to be a gift to us when they're working appropriately. But a rule of life is not a law. A rule is not handed down to us. A rule of life is self-generated from your own hopes and desires, from what you long for your life to be in Christ. Now, where a law has little or no flexibility, a rule of life is very flexible. It can be evaluated and reshaped. You will fail at it often, and that's okay because that is part of the process. Now, a rule of life is not guilt or shame based. It's based on relationship with our Lord, relationship with other people in our lives. And lastly, a rule of life is not meant to keep you away from something negative, though it may do that. A rule of life is designed to direct you toward a positive vision of a flourishing life. Let's take marriage, for example. When it comes to my marriage to Kathleen, a law would be something like, don't sleep with other people, right? Now, I didn't make that rule up, by the way. God did. We call it a fidelity covenant, all right? Is there flexibility in that law? Not so much, right? Okay. Is there a level of guilt versus innocence there? Yes. If I cross that line, there are deeply devastating consequences for guilt there. Okay? Now, what about a rule of life in our marriage? Well, that's something that's different. One of the things in our rule of life in marriage is that we spend Fridays together. That's my Sabbath day, and we just spend it together. We eat lunch together. We run errands together. We watch old episodes of Friends together, whatever. We just do it together, right? Now, another rule of life in our marriage is that we go on walks together. In the warmer months, we do this almost every day, but it's not a law. It's not like, do you, Stephen, take Kathleen? Kathleen, do you take Stephen? Therefore, now you're going to walk together every day. No. It's a rule for our life that causes flourishing in our marriage. Now, sometimes we're able to do it, sometimes we're not. Now, when we don't go for our daily walk, we're not guilty of not doing it and then liable for some punishment. But I will say this, we might bicker more, right? We might annoy each other just a little bit more when we're not connected to each other in that way. The rule of life in our marriage helps lead us to a place of thriving. In the same way, a spiritual rule of life should help us in that journey towards closeness with God. And most of us have probably longed for that in some way in our lives. And maybe for some of us, it's been a while since we longed for that, and we want to see that renewed in our lives. Or at least many of us have probably paid lip service to the idea that we want to be close to God, but then we just don't know how to get there, right? It's like, oh, God, I know you're there. How do I make that connection? A rule of life should help us on the path towards spiritual thriving in God. Now, another thing that a rule of life will do is help us to live in alignment with our deepest desires. Now, think about the appetites that rule over us in our life. They're inside all of us, these primal desires, pleasure, gratification, success. I want those things. The Apostle Paul described it in this way, that there's like a war of loves in our lives between the spirit and the flesh. Now, how much more is that exacerbated by a digital world that keeps shoving in our faces all of our desires, moment, not just like day after day, but moment by moment, all of this getting shoved in your face and saying, take it, it's your, you can have it, it's right there, you want it, here, right? But a rule of life can serve like almost as an act of defiance against a digital empire. We need this in our lives so that we can do whatever it is that God has put us on this planet to do, so that we cannot get sucked in by a world that wants us to buy that next thing that we don't need or watch that next episode of Yellowstone over and over and binge watch it. It's a good show. You can watch it. Okay. A rule of life can help us experience peace in a way that feels almost impossible in the hurry of our modern lives. Now, I understand that even if I say all that and we can kind of conceptually ascend to the idea that, okay, that could be good in my life, even if I say all that, a rule of life is still a bit of a hard sell in our world today. You might be here for it, but so many other people are not. In a world where the overwhelming message that gets shoved down our face is that rules are bad, right? And they keep us from being free. And perhaps in a world like that, we can forget that there's a deep part of us that actually craves a sense of order in the midst of chaos. Not just some anecdotal evidence of this desperate desire that we have for order in our world, even in a world that says, you can have it, you can do it, you don't need rules, you can go this way, you can go that way, whichever way makes sense for you. You live your truth, right? In a world like that, I've been amazed by the phenomenon of a guy named Jordan Peterson. Anybody familiar with it? He's all over the internet, okay? Before any of you get triggered or whatever, I'm not here to comment on Jordan Peterson. He is, in case you don't know who he is, he's a Canadian psychology professor who has spent the past few years basically speaking his mind and making half the world angry, okay? With social media posts and talk show appearances and things like that. But before anyone makes a snap judgment, gets triggered, whatever, you know, I'm not interested in commenting on Jordan Peterson. What I am interested in is this, that his book that came out in 2018 was number one on the best-selling charts for over a year, almost a year and a half. Particularly interested because his book was called 12 Rules for Life. So let me get this straight, okay? Our culture is kind of spinning into this oblivion of be true to yourself, live your truth, don't let anybody tell you what to do, deconstruct everything, and the best-selling book in the world is a book about rules. What? Right now, in our particular moment in history in the West, everything has kind of swung way over to the side of do what feels good for you, right? Now, the result is confusion, anxiety, frustration, I'm chasing what I want, but I'm actually not getting what I want. So it's no wonder that we might see a longing for order in the midst of the chaos of our culture and our own minds. Too much structure, and we start to suffocate. Too much freedom, and our anxiety goes through the roof. And some of you have ever been to Cheesecake Factory? I like the food enough that I don't get too anxious, but I have ways to mitigate that. If you ever look at the Cheesecake menu, how can one restaurant have that many food items on their menu? Seriously. So we had our staff, this past Wednesday, we had our staff annual staff gathering at the Cheesecake Factory. And now for years at the Cheesecake Factory, I have been ordering the same thing every single time for 15 years, all right? The jambalaya chicken and shrimp pasta. So I haven't even looked at the menu for years. The menu gives me anxiety to look at something like that. This past week, I was determined to order something new. So what did I do while I was waiting for them to come? I got there early so we could get seats. I read through the entire menu. It's a book. It's a thick book. Each page has 30 different entrees. It's incredible. The Cheesecake Factory menu is a perfect example of our modern lives, is it not? Way too many options, way too much choice, sensory overload in that space, and the result that we experience in life is anxiety. Now, especially for somebody like me, because I don't eat food, I don't eat out enough to not get the food that I want when I'm eating. I want to win when I'm out to eat, all right? I can't afford to make a wrong decision, all right? So the more options you have, the more freedom you have, the more anxiety you're likely to feel. And in a world like the one that we live in, people who don't have a rule of life are easy prey, right? Now here's the irony of freedom, though. All that freedom is not making us more free, is it? It's making us more enslaved. But a good rule can actually set you free, not bind you. Now, maybe the idea of a rule of life is triggering or challenging for some of you, but here's something to consider. All of us already have a rule of life. It's more likely than not that you already have a basic way that you rule, that you live your life. You have a morning ritual. You have something in your muscle memory about how soon in your day you pick up your phone. You have ways that you spend your money, ways that you shop, the ways and rhythms that occur in your life. The question is not, do you have a rule of life? the question is, do you know what your rule of life is? And here's the more important question. I think this is such a good one. Do you know what your rule of life is doing to you? Okay? Everything that we do does something to us. The things we do make us more free or more enslaved. So here's what I want to do. I told you this morning that this is going to be a bit more practical this morning. I want you guys to be able to start thinking through what a rule of life might look like for you. And I have a spreadsheet that you can use that's going to be helpful. Lisa has that, and at the end of the service, if you want that spreadsheet, she can pass it out to you at the door back there. And you can take that home with you today and just start thinking about what are rhythms that I could have in my life that are going to bring me closer to abiding in Jesus. But before you even think about filling that out, there's some things to keep in mind. My goal this morning is really to help you make your own rule of life. So, seven things to keep in mind when you're creating your own personal rule of life, and they'll come up here on the screen. The first is start small, okay? you're not going to be able to live like a monk or a nun on day one, right? Okay, so start where you're at, not where you think that you should be. A general rule of thumb is if you really want to cultivate a good rule in your life, you want to cultivate a life of God in the kingdom and grow in your personal walk with Jesus, it takes about an hour of day in prayer. That's what Mother Teresa said, right? You're like, wow. Right? Now, I know some of you type A people in the room are going to be like, oh, okay, all right, tomorrow, hour a day. Like, don't do it. Don't do it, all right? I'm going to go out on a limb and say for most of us, we're not quite there right now, and that may seem overwhelming to you. Keep in mind, though, like, hour a day, okay, keep in mind, and we think that's crazy, like, well, how could I do that? How could I fit that in? Keep in mind that the average American spends about 2 hours a day on Facebook products or YouTube. Whoa. You know that app on your phone. You know, you can check, what was my screen time, right? Don't start with an hour a day. Start with 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I love the rule of life that my friends down at Sanctuary Church in Providence try to live by. And it's very simple. To wake up in the morning, Bible before phone. That's it. That's a very, very simple part of a rule of life. I'm going to pick up my Bible this morning before I pick up my phone. And for some of us, that might be radical. Others suggest that you can do something as simple as buying an old alarm clock. Like, instead of using your phone as your alarm clock, most of us sleep with our phones, like, right next to our heads, which is horrible for our development. Like, the last thing we did before we fell asleep was, like, watching something or looking something up on our phone, and the first thing that we do in the morning is pick up our phone, and what's happening? What's going on? What did Donald Trump say last night? Like, what does that do for our souls? Right? Scientists tell us the last thing that we think of before we go to bed and the first thing that we think of when we wake up shape our brain more than anything else. One of the most radical things that you can do this week is maybe buy an old alarm clock and use that instead of your phone. Put your phone someplace else. Wake up, read a psalm, then spend a few minutes contemplating God's love for you. Then begin your day. That simple. That simple. Number two, be specific, not aspirational. So maybe you know, part of your rule of life, I'm going to go for a walk today. And so spend short, like 20 minutes walking by myself and thinking on God. That's a very specific thing that you can do, right? Instead of being aspirational and be like my goal is to connect more deeply with the like injustice in this world, like okay, that's like woo. No, be very specific. All right, subtraction, not addition. We need to think about, like we talked last week about how hurried our lives are, so we need to think about things that we're going to stop doing. Maybe before we think about adding new things into our lives. So before you start filling out, here are the new things that I'm going to do in my life, maybe you need to start by making a list of here are the things I actually don't need to do anymore. take into account your season of life and your stage of discipleship. Some of you maybe have kids, or maybe you're starting a new job, or you're like in the middle of a school. Like, give yourself some grace for the moment that you're in life, okay? And then use those things to leverage them toward getting yourself closer to Jesus. Okay, so if you're a student and you're studying and you know that you have to study, set an alarm clock that it forces you to pause, like somewhere in the middle of your study. And then when that dings, you pause for like a minute. Say, I'm going to think on God for this minute. Then I'm going to go right back to my studying. If you're a parent and you have a newborn, maybe, every time that baby wakes up, it's like a toll to remind you, like the ringing of a bell, remind you, I'm going to think on God. I'm going to think on God. As I pick this baby up and as I deal with the stress of this moment, I'm going to think on God in these moments, Take into account your personality. Some of you, maybe you're like me and you're introverted. Okay? So part of your rule of life should probably be getting away from people. If you are extroverted, find those extroverted people who you can be with and pray together, right? Keep a healthy balance of upstream and downstream practices. So what do I mean by this? So upstream practices would be those things that are a challenge for you. For me, that's fasting. Like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Thank you, but no thank you. Downstream practice would be like going for a walk and spending some time in solitude. Like, that's easy for me. All right? So we have to be aware of those things that are hard and difficult and have a balance of those things. Because the things that are hard for us are going to shape us in different ways than those things that are natural for us. So we need a healthy balance of things that are come naturally to us and things that are a challenge to us. And you need more of those downstream, easier practices than the upstream practices, but we should have both. And make sure that your rule is holistic, that you're thinking about your mind and your body and your soul. Everything that we do is spiritual, right? So the question we need to ask is, does it make me more like Jesus or less like Jesus? Is it forming me or is it deforming me, right? I love, this is the way Eugene Peterson paraphrases the famous verse in Romans chapter 12, verse 1. He says it this way. He says, so here's what I want you to do. Think about this in terms of a rule of life. Here's what I want you to do. God helping you, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Everything is spiritual, right? Sleep is a spiritual practice. Like some people have in their rule of life, I'm going to sleep 8 hours a day. Right? There's no word in Hebrew for spiritual, by the way. Did you know that? Fascinating, right? Because to them, that culture, everything is spiritual. So when we pick this series back up in a few weeks, I think I mentioned this. We've been planning to go through the book of Job for a while, and we're starting that next week. So we're going to hit the pause button on this series and then start it back up again in March. But when we pick this series back up, we're going to talk about other practices, and there are several. Other practices that can be part of your rule of life. Some of them may seem super spiritual, like fasting, but remember, everything is spiritual. So you can't go over-spiritualizing fasting and under-spiritualizing acts of compassion and justice. Right? Tomorrow is MLK Day, and it's a day that we remember a Jesus lover who found his calling in the pursuit of justice. It's a spiritual activity. Allow it to be just that. Not an exercise in self-righteous indignation or outrage, but an intimate connection to the heart of the Almighty, who, by the way, said to his people in Isaiah chapter 58, is not this the kind of fasting that I've chosen to loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? It's spiritual to engage in these works. Now, how is justice seeking, compassionate servanthood a part of your rhythm in life? It's all spiritual. A rule of life is designed to keep you close to the author of justice, the author of wholeness, the author of shalom. Now, a few things to remember before I close. A good rule is a working document, okay? It's going to change, all right? You have to ask yourself, is this doing its job? How can I tweak it? Did I start with too much? Do I need to back off a bit? Am I not doing enough? Do I need to add this? How can I change it as you go? A rule of life is a means to an end, okay? It is not the end in and of itself. The end goal is not, I have a rule of life and I'm a super spiritual person. That's not the end goal, okay? I don't care, right? The end goal is to be more like Jesus, to become more loving, more peaceful, more generous, more patient, more kind. It's so important, thirdly, to prioritize rest. As important as it is for us to prioritize what we need to do, it's important for us to prioritize times when we're not doing anything, all right? Disciplines of abstinence and engagement. There's two kinds, abstinence and engagement. As a general rule, the more busy your life is, the more you need to prioritize disciplines of abstinence, of not doing things. How many of us like finish binge watching or binge scrolling and walk away saying, boy, my life feels so full? No, we need to figure out things we need to stop doing. Our lives are full, but they're unfulfilling. Lastly, there's no right way to make a rule of life. There are best practices that are obvious probably to most of us, like praying in the morning, like having a day of Sabbath. We're going to talk a lot about that when we pick this back up again. Church on Sunday, you guys are here. This is part of a spiritual rule of life that many of us have as part of our rhythm. It's a good place to start. So do an audit of your habits. Like look at what's going on in your life. Look back at your last week and say, what did I spend my time doing? Get out a piece of paper. What did I do last week? Where did I give my time? Take out that app on your phone, you know, the one that, you know, says this is how much time you spent on me, right? Woo. Begin to craft your rule. Start with what is most important to you. Like, it's kind of like a packing list, right? You're going to put the things that matter most in first, and then you're going to see what's left. Try it out for a few months, maybe even a year, then tweak it. Now, here's what I know. I know that there are all kinds of roadblocks in your life. All right, Mike, you can come on up. I know that we have roadblocks in our life that are going to keep us from doing this well. All right? Many of you know what those roadblocks are. And so Cindy and I are going to be up here as Mike leads us in worship. Cindy and I are going to be up here to pray for anyone who wants prayer, okay? Anyone who's saying, like, God, I want to take these steps. I want to figure this thing out, but I know that there's roadblocks. Or maybe you know there's roadblocks, but you don't even know what the roadblocks are. So you might want to come up to you and say, I don't know what I don't know. Help me, God. And we're here. We want to be here to pray for anybody who wants that. There's nothing about our modern world that wants this for us. Right? This is an act of defiance to build this into your life. Think of it that way. Be that rebel and push back.